You may be wondering about tonight's topic. Positive illusion, creative self-deception, and success in life. Often, and generally, we think that illusion is a bad thing. However, the way society works today and the way that we individuals function in society is that illusion is not so bad. Self-deception has good purposes. Now, how can that be? From the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we want to come out of the darkness to the light. When we say Om Ajnana Timirandhasya, that means I was born in the darkness of ignorance with my eyes forced shut. So we don't want to be covered. We don't want to be bewildered. We don't want to be an illusion. So there's the idea, even amongst material people, there's the idea that to be a healthy person, you should see reality as accurately as possible. This is the general belief that all of you in your dealings with yourself, in your dealings with others, in your dealings with the world, you want to see clearly and precisely. And the more clearly and precisely that you see, the more you can be said to be a real person. Now, actually, this is kind of like a folk mythology, because the way we live our life, it's not like that. Just think about it. The people that you know, friends, family, neighbors, are they all trying to see everything about their life precisely and accurately? Do you think so? No. So the latest thing in Kali Yuga, the age of darkness, is to realize that illusion is actually not a bad thing. Illusion has very useful purposes. Because if you're always trying to see yourself for what you are, and you're trying to see the world for what it is, this is not very enlivening. So, positive illusion. In other words, to be an illusion has good value, which may lead to success. Because you're feeling positive about yourself, you're feeling positive about the world, and that propels you forward, the ideas. That positive conception of yourself and the world allows you to achieve the heights of success. Whereas if you're always if you always are thinking, oh, maybe I'm not so good, maybe the world is not so good, how will you be motivated to push ahead? And isn't life all about pushing ahead? What do you think? Isn't that how you're being trained, molded, and shaped to push ahead, to climb the ladder of success somehow, to climb the ladder of the corporate world, to climb the ladder of the business world, somehow or other get more. Somehow or other achieve more. This dream has been planted in so many of you. Just work harder, try harder, get the right connections, know the right people. Life can be so much better. Have the right illusions, and success can be yours. Don't try to have an accurate self-understanding. Inflate yourself. Puff yourself up a bit. Just a bit. It's healthy. This is the message. So there are three things that you can look at your life and see how you're tricking yourself. And the world of Maya will give you full support for your tricking yourself. Number one, it's okay to have unrealistically positive beliefs about yourself. It's okay. Number two, you should have a degree of illusions about how much you can control. That's okay. You should actually feel that you can control your life. You can make plans. You can make changes. To have some measure of this kind of illusion about your ability to control, to have some of that illusion is good. Because then you'll be motivated to push ahead, yes? And number three, to have unrealistic optimism about material life is considered healthy. You have to think that any moment your success will come. Others are doing it. Others are materially happy. You can also, right? Simply you have to work harder, know the right persons, get the right breaks, and material life will be good for you. What does Krishna say about this in Bhagavad Gita? Krishna explains, Asha Pasha Shatar Bhada. The conditioned soul in this world is bound by a network of false hopes. So Bhagavad Gita teaches us to discriminate between real hope and false hopes. The Vaishnavas, the Krishna Bhaktas, they're also bound by hope. There's one very developed attitude in bhakti called Ashabhanda, bound by hope, in which the devotee prays to Krishna, I don't have any attraction for hearing and chanting about Krishna. I wasn't born in a pious family. I basically have no good qualities. Still, I have the hope that one day I'll attain Krishna. This is actually, this mentality is a symptom of developing love for Krishna. Even though I have no good qualifications, still I'm hoping against hope that Krishna will recognize me. So there's hope in the bhakti world. And that hope is real. But what Krishna is talking about in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Asha Pasha Shatar Bhada, bound by a network of false hopes. But society today wants to inspire you in that way. Yes, yes, you can do it. You are better than you think. Believe in yourself. Believe in the world. Its success is out there. And a person like you is sure to get it somehow. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. Those who give up are the weak ones. But you can learn how to swim with the sharks. That is the symptom of the successful person. How to get ahead. How to make your way. Somehow or other, right? Even when the odds are against you. So let's first start with illusion number one. Positive illusion number one. To have unrealistic conceptions of yourself and what you can do. How does this work? First of all, you see others around you as less than you. We can all recognize this materialistic tendency. It's like an inbuilt automatic consideration that those around you are less. They may not know it, but they are less. As for yourself, although others have a less opinion of you, you always have more of an opinion of yourself than others do. So you see others as less, and you see yourself as more. Others may have a low conception of you, but they don't know what they're talking about. You know yourself. You know you're more. Others may see themselves as great, but you know. In your heart, you know they're low. So this is how society trains us. And indeed, this is what it means to be a conditioned soul. To have faith in the material energy. That somehow that you're going to make the material world a happy, peaceful place of success. You're going to do it. Whether you do it in a small way or a big way, you are going to achieve success. Everyone else is doing it. Well, most people are doing it. So why not you? Over the past few decades, psychological research has shown that the human psychology is such that it always makes mistakes on the optimistic side. There's something psychologists say is built into the human mentality. You look at yourself, you look at the world, you're always seeing that things are better than they actually are. Now, we know, as followers of Bhagavad Gita, we know where this mentality comes from. It is Maya. You look at the mirage and you think you're seeing something of substance. So to be in the material world means to overestimate your possibilities, your opportunities. Isn't that what advertising is all about? When you turn on your TV, even you look at all the billboards, all the signs in Mumbai, they're always overblowing the material possibilities. All this can be yours. You can have it all. The signboards in Mumbai are becoming so... every year they become more lusty. Practically, if you're riding in the car, you just have to look at the floor of the car. You can't look out the window. So those signboards are letting you know possibilities are there for you. Work harder. You'll get it. What you see on these signs, you can have. Don't have any doubts. Don't doubt the material energy. Doubt Krishna, but do not doubt Maya. Maya will never let you down. You will gratify your senses. You will achieve. You'll be materially happy. Don't worry. It's going to happen to you. So, psychologists are struggling with the point that the reality that most people don't hold accurate perceptions of themselves and the world. Now, maybe that's not a bad thing, they're thinking. Maybe it's good. Because by looking at yourself and the world in an unrealistic way, then you feel motivated to gratify your senses and try for material success. And that's what it's all about, right? So if being in illusion helps you to achieve and to get more, then obviously illusion is good, yes? Because the goal of life is to please your senses. So any mentality that helps you in getting this goal must be good. So then you might say, well, wait a minute. Isn't it dangerous to get too much into illusion? If you say, for example, that a little bit of illusion is good, well, someone might think that a lot of illusion is even better. So how do you draw the line between a little bit of illusion that's good and too much illusion that's bad? Who draws the line? The materialists have no answer for this, except that trust society, that society will keep you from getting too much in illusion and will keep you right on the line with just the right amount of illusion. You trust society. What do you think? From Shastra we know what is the number one illusion. To think that the body and mind are the self. But how can you do anything in this world, the argument says? How can you do anything in this world if you don't think you're the body and mind? Because everything in this world is about pleasing the body and mind. And then you read Bhagavad Gita and you hear you're not the body and mind. How are you going to achieve? How are you going to be successful? If you want to be a proper materialist, you don't think about what you are. And that is healthy illusion. Because as soon as you start thinking about what you really are, you don't have that drive to get ahead. You're just being too... You're contemplating too much, staring at your own navel. What am I? Am I spirit, soul? Am I this body? No. Don't waste your life in this way. Cover yourself with the illusion that it doesn't matter what you are. And then you simply work hard, do what is necessary to get ahead to achieve success. That's healthy illusion. What do you think? Are we going to have that kind of life in which we deceive ourselves? Self-deception. In other words, the more creative you are about your self-deception, the more people think that you're a cool person, that you're interesting. Oh, look how you're deceiving yourself. How interesting. Then we come to Krishna Bhakti and we hear that illusion is unwanted. Clarity is appreciated. Penetrating knowledge. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can cross over the ocean of material existence. So transcendental knowledge is not simply theoretical. It's not simply some religious belief. It does things. Real knowledge, the knowledge that Krishna is teaching, causes transformations individually and socially for the whole world. That's why Krishna also says, that transcendental knowledge is like a fire that burns unlimited quantities of sinful karma. To live a material life, you are trained to have an acceptable, a socially acceptable amount of illusion. To live the spiritual life, you're taught that you want everything crystal clear. But still, I think you may not be convinced. You may be thinking, all right, someone may be an illusion, but the main thing is to get the success. If you have to be an illusion to get the success, that's all right, yes? Ask yourself this question. Will the material success satisfy you? Has it satisfied anyone? What does Prahlad Maharaj say in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam? Punap punascharvana charvananam. The only pleasure that material life can offer you is chewing that which has already been chewed. Very graphic description given by Prahlad Maharaj. A doctor can tell you that to properly digest your food, you should chew each mouthful 30 times. How many of you do that? Raise your hands. This is what I was taught in school. Chew each mouthful 30 times before you swallow it. No one does it here. The example that Prahlad Maharaj gives is that, let's say someone does chew so much, 30 times, and then reaches in the mouth, pulls out what they've chewed so vigorously, and hands it to you. Now you enjoy. This is what generation after generation of material life is doing. The parents chew very vigorously, and then they give to their children. Their children chew very vigorously and pass it down to their children. And in this way, material society perpetuates, extends such a tasteless activity generation after generation. Sometimes it's said that devotees of Krishna are not properly paying their debts. They're not being responsible. But actually, the Krishna devotee is the most responsible person about paying all the debts to family, society, and so forth. What does the Shastra say? Devarshi bhutaptar ninam patrinam. Anyone who is born in this world has debts. We acknowledge that. First of all, you have the debt to the devas because the demigods supply so many natural necessities. Then you have a debt to the rishis, the great sages who have provided real knowledge, Vedic knowledge. And then you have debts to all living entities, even horses, cows, buffaloes, because they're helping human society. And then, you have a debt to all of human society for giving you political arrangements, economic arrangements. So we acknowledge those debts. And then, for Patrinam, your forefathers, ancestors, yes, they have given you the family traditions. They have given you a particular family dynasty to be born into. So the devotee recognizes all those debts, but knows how to pay them all back simply by serving Krishna. In that way, the devotee sees clearly without any illusion. But material life requires you to imagine that you're going to satisfy at least a few persons. And this never happens. People are never satisfied with material activities. They change politicians that they're following. They change the consumer goods that they have in their house. Constant changing. This is what is considered success now in material society. Don't keep the same things. Don't keep the same relationships. It's coming now to India, yes? Juggling relationships. It's happening, I know. You know also. What is success? How do you define the successful life? Since you are spiritual, how can matter make you happy? Someone who wants to see clearly will address this point. But the world is not giving you any honor for seeing clearly, right? No, the world honors you if you are in illusion, positive illusion. Think you're going to make it big. Think you're going to be happy materially. Realize it doesn't matter what you are, so don't worry about it. There was one person in Australia who became a devotee when she was 16. So she was still going to school. And she would always ask the teacher, all the teachers, questions like, what is the origin of life? What is the origin of the universe? What is the self? And the teachers, they got so frustrated, they had a meeting amongst themselves and they called her in. And they said, you are asking these kind of questions because you are a teenager. But when you get older, you'll understand not to ask these questions. In other words, when you get older, you'll understand that illusion is positive. And then you'll just gratify your senses and try to make money like everyone else. And you'll expect that the world has something for you. You just have to get it. It's out there waiting for you. This is positive illusion. Creative self-deception. Now you may say, material life can't be so bad because everyone wants material happiness. Why does Krishna in Bhagavad Gita downgrade material happiness so much? Perhaps Krishna is simply exaggerating just to scare us. It can't be that bad, right? Material life, it's got to be something there, right? Everyone is trying to get it. How can it be all bad? And then you think, surely successful people, they're happy. And when I become successful, I'll be happier. Right? Right? I explained to you some years ago, but I don't think you remember because it was a while back, about a famous study done in Silicon Valley. In order to qualify for this sociological research study, you had to have three characteristics. Number one, you had to have a house worth more than $1 million. Number two, you had to have at least $1 million cold cash in the bank. And number three, you had to have investments worth more than $1 million. Then you qualified for this study. And so all these persons were approached by researchers. And they were asked about their life. And 90% of those persons in that study said, we're not rich. We just have what we need. And we could use a lot more. we're not rich. Many of them were working 70 hours a week because they said, we don't have enough. What's a $1 million house that's already paid off, $1 million in cash, $1 million in investments? It's nothing. They were trying to convince the researchers, it's nothing these days. It's pennies. You're not secure with that amount of money. So the researchers asked them, all right, if you're not secure with $1 million in cash, a house paid off worth $1 million, and $1 million in investments, how much makes you secure? Oh, if I had $30 million, then that would be okay. And each time, the person would say, look, I know you may not believe me. I know you may think that I'm being greedy, but try to understand, I'm doing all this work 70 hours a week for my children. I'm doing it for them. But obviously, if you're working 70 hours a week, how often do you see your children? But they always would say that, I'm doing it for the children. And furthermore, many of them would point out, this is Silicon Valley. I'm worth a few million. But do you understand that just up the street, there's someone who's worth 50 million? How do you think my boy feels playing with his playmates when and their father is worth 50 million and my boy's father is only worth 5 million? How do you think my boy feels? So I've got to get more money for the sake of my boy. So he can hold his head up high in the neighborhood. That his father is not simply worth 5 million. That's why I'm working. I don't want my son to be psychologically damaged. Having a father who's only worth 5 million. When his playmates, their fathers, worth 50 million. Don't you understand this is psychologically damaging? You don't believe me, huh? Yes, this is a true study. Since I think you don't believe, we'll show you part of the study now. You can see for yourself a testimony of one of the persons involved in the research. I hear that often you have these video clips, so I decided I would also bring one. It's just 5 minutes, so pay attention. And you will see the realities of positive illusion.
What does it feel? $1 million buy you nowadays? Luxury cars? 4-star European vacations? Large diamonds? Well, not if you live in Silicon Valley.
My name is Hal Steger, and my net worth is $3.5 million.
Access the address. Hal Steger is a Silicon Valley engineer who has, by almost any definition, made it. Except that he lives in Silicon Valley, where even some millionaires see themselves as working class.
This is my 12th startup, and some of my friends say I'm the ultimate glutton for punishment.
Several of the tech startups he has worked for or founded have done well, but he continues to work as hard as ever.
I started a company called Rubrik in 1997. 3 years later, we sold that company for $372 million. As part of it, at one point, my stock in the company was worth about $35 million.
Like a lot of working-class millionaires, Hal Steger's net worth began plummeting in 2000, when the NASDAQ suffered its great fall. By the time he cashed out all his Rubrik stock, he had a net worth of about $3 million. After 18 months off, Mr. Steger returned to work, in part because he felt he had to in order to maintain his lifestyle, but also because he wanted to.
Work is a very important part of my life. It's where I get a lot of sense of achievement, of fulfillment.
He's the first one in the office and the last one to leave. So we refer to it as Hal time.
I guess it works out to be about 60, 70 hours a week. And then the expected results are, for me, it doesn't feel like it's a big onerous burden on myself. But it definitely has been a challenge for my family at times. And it's the balance between your personal life and your work life.
All right.
Enjoy
the evening. Yeah, you too. See you later. I will be back online after dinner, after my kids go to bed.
Though Mr. Steger ranks among the top 2% of Americans in terms of wealth, he describes himself as middle class and shares the angst of the middle class, from saving enough for retirement to the soaring cost of health care.
One of the reasons why I want to keep working is because I do have two daughters, and my younger daughter had to get her kidneys removed and get a kidney transplant when she was 8 years old, which is now almost 5 years ago. And it could get to the point where she becomes non-insurable at some point in the future. And so if that happens, then if she does need another operation for, you know, $500,000 or whatever, I'd like to be able to afford that.
But surely Mr. Steger splurges occasionally. Well, after the sale of Rubrik, he did treat his extended family to a week in Hawaii. He also paid off the mortgage on his four-bedroom house.
Can't live without bills.
Hello? Anybody here?
Yet one reason Mr. Steger does not feel rich is life is very expensive in Silicon Valley, where he chooses to live. Another reason is the staggering size of the wealth he sees everywhere around him.
And all of us kind of remember my dad working, basically being a workaholic. And I also remember telling myself, okay, I'm not going to be a workaholic like my dad. And I do want to spend not just token quality time with my wife and my kids. I want to have a really good, healthy relationship with my family.
Dad, you have a really good work ethic. Like, you try really hard to do well, which I admire.
I do want them to grow up having the work ethic in mind rather than the wealth ethic. I don't want them to have a sense of entitlement. That's very important to me, that they know how to function in society, they can be financially independent, and so that's really what drives me to keep working.
And you don't feel rich, do you?
No.
Yeah.
No, we watch our money. Yeah. I don't feel rich.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I don't actually think that we are rich. I really don't. In my heart of hearts, I don't think we're rich. I really think to feel rich around here, you would need at least $10 or $20 million to be in the rich psychological class. I usually work till about 9:30 or 10 at night, so, and then I'll call it a day. Get up and do it again, but not like a hamster in a wheel. I don't feel that way. If I did, there's no way I could keep doing what I'm doing.
So Mr. Steger, like most other working class millionaires in Silicon Valley, continues to work. And to work hard, in part because that's how he's built, and in part because he doesn't feel secure in a world in which he is, to use the words of one of Mr. Steger's peers, a dime a dozen.
As the gentleman was saying, I don't think that I'm working so hard, but I guess I can't think like that. In other words, I have to think that this is good what I'm doing. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. So this is creative self-deception. I have to convince myself that what I'm doing must be done. If I don't convince myself, how can I do what I'm doing? In other words, I have to put myself into illusion, and that's positive. I have to think that this is needed, that is needed, and then I'll do things, and then I'll work hard. So this is the power of positive illusion. We don't consider illusion to be positive. Certainly, of course, we appreciate families that stay together, parents that take care of their children. But what is the purpose? What is the purpose of life? Is it simply somehow or other to get success some way, somehow? And then we neglect our internal development. By neglecting our internal development, we become the greatest failures. So there is a way how to take care of the material necessities, at the same time, how to deal with the topmost necessity, which is our spiritual development. Because Krishna is the origin of both the spiritual and the material energies, Krishna is the supreme expert in balance. Sometimes we have this idea that if I become too close to Krishna, I'll lose my perspective, I'll lose my footing in the material world. If I get too much bhakti, if I get too close to Krishna, one has to be careful. You become dizzy and bewildered if you get too close to Krishna. Because you have to live in this world. You have to make a living. You have to support your family. Won't it be such that if you get too close to Krishna, you will just lose your standing. You'll tumble over. You'll be lost in the race. And you'll finish last. How can we think like that when both the material and spiritual energies come from Krishna? He says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo, matta sarvam pravartate. I am the origin of everything, material and spiritual. Everything emanates from me. That everything emanates from Krishna means he is the supreme expert in balance. And he says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever and wherever there's a disturbance to the balance of material and spiritual affairs, Krishna says he comes to fix the balance. But yet we're thinking, what does Krishna know about balance? One has to be careful. Can we know about balance separate from Krishna? The whole Bhagavad Gita is about how to balance the material with the spiritual. Arjuna is about to fight a battle. He's a warrior. He's a family man. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to him. Just so that you'll never be able to say, Bhagavad Gita is only for the sadhus, only for the brahmanas. We are not interested in positive illusion. We are interested in how to precisely balance based on Krishna's instructions. If we work so hard that we forget what is the ultimate goal of life, then how can we be said to be successful? We want something more than illusion, self-deception. We want the torchlight of real knowledge. Then we can actually see. The whole message of Bhagavad Gita is about seeing clearly, not deluding ourselves. But if we have no transcendental knowledge, naturally we will start to think, what you don't know won't hurt you. Why do you have to understand everything? Just satisfy your senses. Turn on the TV. Merge your consciousness into the TV. Everything will be all right. What we are trying to establish is a wisdom culture. Reestablish a wisdom culture based on knowing the full potential amount that's available to human beings. By hearing from Krishna, you reach the full potential of your human form of life. By hearing from Krishna, you reach the full potential of what you can know. You reach the full extent of knowledge available to a human being. So we say, instead of glorifying illusion, why not glorify real knowledge? We are happy to know things as they are. So the Krishna Bhakta doesn't want to bewilder himself or put himself under self-deception. We want to understand things clearly as they are. So once again, try to understand what is going on in the world around us. Glorification is given to those who don't think. Glorification is given to those who are willing to live a life in which the deep principles of living are not examined. Just push ahead. Get more. Somehow or other, get more. That is your destiny in life. Who says you have to understand everything? Who told you that? Who says that you need self-awareness? What store sells self-awareness? Who says you need to understand what is God, the ultimate source? Who says that? Think about your mind and senses and all that they can have in this lifetime. What happens after that? Don't worry about it. So we are not interested in positive illusion. We don't see that it's positive. We want a realistic understanding of the self. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains... Can I have a cheddar, please? Thank you. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that there is the false ego and there's the real ego. The real ego is that we are Krishna's eternal servants. The more we identify with the real ego, the more we can be for real. The false ego means I'm better than most everyone around me. They don't understand. They don't understand they're lesser than me, and they don't understand I'm more than them. World peace will happen when everyone understands my glories. The world will be a better place if they would simply listen. If everyone would simply listen to me, the world would be a better place. They're having problems in the world because they haven't recognized me. This is considered positive illusion. Think yourself valuable. Believe in yourself. You can get it. You can be happy. Think that there are no limitations. Doesn't that sound inviting? No limitations. Intelligence means to recognize the limitations. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Dosha Nidarshana. The intelligent person sees the limitations. Birth, death, disease, and old age. Sees the limitations and then takes up the process to go beyond those limitations. But that going beyond can only be done spiritually, not materially. So remember, the gentleman was explaining, I'm working so hard, I don't think it's a burden. And, you know, I can't really think that it's a burden, otherwise I wouldn't be able to work so hard. So I have to convince myself that it's all necessary. And then I will do the necessary. Now just think how that applies to us. We're doing so many things in the material world because we've accepted that it's necessary. And naturally we resist any encouragement that, you know, just think what you're doing is not completely necessary. Or there's a better way to do what you're doing so that you achieve both the material necessities and the spiritual necessity. We want to establish a wisdom culture in which people can understand how to live in this world in a way that they'll actually be happy without putting themselves in illusion. We are happy to turn the light on in the darkness. You know, there are some creatures, they don't like light. As soon as you turn the light on in the room, they disappear. We don't want to live like that. The Krishna Bhakta likes to live in full illumination. So again, let us ask ourselves, how much am I deluding myself in a very creative way? Pushing on with my life in a way that I'm not going to think about this, I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to care too much what I am. I'm not going to care so much what is God. I have so much to do. And we can also tell ourselves, okay, later, when I'm 60 or 70, then that's the time for trying to get knowledge. Someone here was telling me how their parents, who were in their 60s, were telling him, You're 25 years old. It's not the time now for spiritual life. The time for spiritual development is when you're in your 60s and 70s. So I said, well, you know, you cannot say this in India to your parents, but if you were Australian, in Australia, you could say to your parents, okay, you say the time for spiritual development is when I'm 60 or 70. Okay, you're 60. Are you doing spiritual development? You say, that's the time, but you're not doing. So what makes you think that when I become 60, I'll do it? We should never sacrifice our clarity of vision. We should never sacrifice seeing clearly and having full knowledge. That is what Krishna wants to give in Bhagavad Gita. That kind of consciousness can't wait for anything. And in fact, by taking the knowledge that Krishna gives, we'll be able to have a well-balanced life in all aspects. We shouldn't have paranoia. We shouldn't fear that by listening to Krishna, we'll lose sight of how to survive in this world. Krishna wants you to do more than survive. Krishna wants you to thrive with wisdom. So we reject illusion, whether negative or positive. We don't think there's anything positive about illusion. Except the highest type of illusion is when you go back to Godhead. In Goloka Vrindavan, then you don't ever think that Krishna is God. You think Krishna is my best friend. Krishna is my son. Krishna is my lover. That is the only kind of illusion we accept. That we forget Krishna is God. But that is divine illusion. But there's nothing divine about material illusion. So we reject it. It is not positive. Now just think, one final point. People are becoming so accustomed to the lack of knowledge that they're going to glorify now illusion. Okay, we don't know. So what? It's not so bad not to know. It's not so bad to be in darkness. You can get a lot done when you're ignorant. You can focus on the material goals more when you're ignorant. This is willful self-deception. We're not interested. We want to understand everything thoroughly. And in that way, our life can be well-rounded and fully balanced. Because Krishna is the source of everything. He is not just the source of the spiritual energy. Krishna is also the source of the material energy. So then why should we fear that if I increase my bhakti, I won't be able to handle the material world anymore? So please consider the three main illusions that we accept in order to live material life. We have a bigger than real vision of ourselves. We think, oh, I am so competent, I will achieve this, I will achieve that. And number two, we think that we actually have powers of control beyond what actually is the reality. We have very little control in life. Here's an example that psychologists give. In India, do people play with dice like, you know, dice and you throw the dice? Sometimes when people play with dice, unconsciously what they do, if they want to roll a high number, they shake the dice very vigorously. No, psychologists have studied this. You know? They don't have much to do, so they study these things. They observe through psychological studies that when people are gambling and they want a high number, they subconsciously they're as if they can have that control to influence a random event by their own prowess, their own ability. And then if they want to roll a low number, what do? The opposite, very softly. So try to understand the illusion behind this. They're actually imagining they have control over a random event, a random process. So we take that example and say that's basically all of material life. You think you can control Maya, and you work very hard. But so much is dictated to you by the material energy. But you give yourself credit. You're shaking very hard or shaking the dice very softly. But it's just material reactions, interactions. So much outside of your control. You have such a tiny, tiny bit of control. And material nature simply gives you what it wants according to your actions and their reactions. But no, what do you think? Just see how vigorously I'm shaking the dice. I'm making a difference. I'm an Ishwar. So this is a prime example given by social scientists about how we have the illusion of control. But they argue that some illusion of control is good because then you start making plans. And in order to have material success, you have to make plans. So you have to convince yourself that you have more control than you actually do. And that then you'll be motivated to work hard. And then the third thing, you have to be optimistic about the material world. This world can become a happy place. believe that, even though it's not true. But by your believing that, by your putting yourself in that kind of illusion, you'll work harder for success. And the whole goal in life is to work hard for success. So do what you have to do. Bewilder yourself in whatever way is necessary so that you'll work hard for success. And then you are a wonderful person. What do you think? Krishna has a much better life to give us than a life of illusion. So we say no positive illusion, no negative illusion. We want the clarity of bhakti knowledge. We want the wisdom culture. We want to understand. We want to know how to deal with Krishna's material and spiritual energies in the best way for the real success in life. Any questions?
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Maharaj, for such a wonderful talk. In dealing with material and spiritual responsibilities that we have in this life, the usual tendency when we become devotee or take up Krishna consciousness seriously is to somehow what I felt that I became more and more, I feel that I am becoming so much irresponsible in my responsibilities or whatever the necessities of this world. So how to balance both things at the same time doing good advancement in spiritual life also.
So as I explained, Krishna is the origin of both the material and spiritual energies. Krishna is the supreme expert in balance. So we take our knowledge from Krishna, how to live in this world in a balanced way. He is the best one to teach that. And he explains that knowledge of balance through parampara. He himself says he comes. Whenever the knowledge of how to balance is disturbed, Krishna says, I come. This is called in Sanskrit, dharma shaglani, disturbance to the balance of spiritual and material activities. So the knowledge is there in Bhagavad Gita how to do this. And someone who understands Bhagavad Gita can give you advice, give you counsel. So in the fourth chapter of the Gita, after Krishna has explained the different types of sacrifices, he says, Tadvidi pranipatena, if you want to know the truth about how to do all these sacrifices within the material world, then you approach a guru who can enlighten you how to be spiritual within the material world. So I see in this Radha Gopinath congregation so many devotees who are expert at balancing. They may be doctors, IT specialists, whatever kind of job they have. I see even the brahmacharis, they're expert at balance. Simply, we have to learn the art from those who know. You can also be successful in this way. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Initially, there is a lot of enthusiasm while we take up the process.
But as the time passes, his lethargy comes and all other anarthas take over the mind and senses. So intelligence becomes somehow stubborn, so that good advices don't really penetrate our consciousness. It becomes totally superficial. So how should we take this process as emergency in this age of Kali?
First of all, we should realize that age of Kali means emergency. But I just saw the headlines a few days ago where the government here was telling people who live in Kashmir to build nuclear bomb shelters because they should expect there'll be a nuclear attack. Isn't that emergency? But what makes us feel so secure in such a crazy world? Japan and China are on the brink of war over some tiny little islands. North Korea, where they don't produce food to feed their population, and people starve so much they turn to cannibalism. And what are they doing? Launching nuclear missiles and threatening. Doesn't that sound like emergency to you? Yet there's something about Maya, positive illusion, that makes us think, oh, it's not so bad. So Krishna gives you the skills to penetrate that illusion. We have to be very attentive, understanding that the power of illusion is so strong, we can be a victim at any moment. So once you understand the true nature of the emergency we're living in, that will motivate you to seek a solution. But if we don't understand the emergency we're living in, we'll be very casual. So the easy way not to understand the emergency, you just turn on the television and merge into all the different television programs you can watch. And then you become very, very submissive, accepting of all the illusions. You get an artificial sense of feeling good about yourself. I saw this on television. Myself feels good. That's just one way that the illusory energy grabs the consciousness through television. Once we understand how powerful the grip of illusion is, we become very careful. Once we start thinking, and Krishna wants you to think, this bhakti culture is for thinking persons. You may not be a thinking person in the beginning, but by listening to Krishna, you become a very deep person who understands how the material energy works, how the spiritual energy works, and the source of both. So gradually, an entire wisdom culture is manifesting. And that wisdom culture is the greatest glory of India. I remember when I was a little boy, in the 50s, my relatives, when it was dinner time, they would always say, you have to finish everything on your plate. Remember the starving people in India? Finish everything on your plate. Now, what do my relatives in the USA say? Oh, so we hear that you're in Mumbai now. We hear that you're in India. They're smart people. They take all the jobs. So in 50 years, India's reputation has gone from being starving people to smart people who take all the IT jobs everywhere. But we want the reputation to be the wisdom people who have all the knowledge, who know the deepest understandings in life. That'll be India's great success. Beyond call centers and IT. Wisdom culture. That you all can do. Anything else?
Harikshna Maharaj, Dandat Pranam. My question is that many times or sometimes it happens that Krishna is reciprocating with us. He sends his message through his devotees, books or any instances. And other way, it is our mind's confusion because we are taking on own way. If we wear the red goggle, then we think that other side is red. Then how can one understand is whether it is Krishna's message or our mind's confusion?
Bhakti is a spiritual science, and we are guided by transcendental professors. And that way, we have a safety check against just imagining. We are not interested, as I said, in positive or negative illusion. We want to see the thing clearly what it is. So therefore, we have the Shastra, and we have the guidance of the Guru. And we have the assembly of experienced practitioners, experienced devotees, the scientific, the spiritual scientific academy. There's the academy, there's the professors, there's the books. That way you don't have to suffer chasing your own mind. This wisdom culture is so opulent. You have the spiritual professors, you have the spiritual books, you have the spiritual academy members. What more do you want? Just plug in. You won't be left to be victimized by your own mind. And it's good to be concerned. It's good to worry that your mind may victimize you. But the wisdom culture provides so many checks, so many safety measures. So push ahead with your Krishna consciousness and take advantage of all those safety measures. You'll be safe. You'll make spiritual advancement. You'll learn how to be spiritual in the material world. All right?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, my question is if someone is a very depressed person and he is thinking that I can't do this, so he is in illusion or is it really he can't do it?
So let me give you, I was thinking whether to speak about this point tonight, but I thought it might be too much of a fine point, detailed point. But since you asked the question, I will address. You know what psychologists have found out? According to their analysis, that the only persons who have a realistic perception of themselves and the world are depressed persons. A depressed person actually understands how powerless they are and how rotten the world is. But the so-called normal people with their positive illusions, they have an overinflated understanding of themselves and what they can do and what's in their control. So I was just thinking today whether I should mention this point. But then depressed persons aren't considered to be in a healthy state, even though they have an accurate vision of the world and themselves. So what then does material life have to offer you? If you don't want to be depressed, take on positive illusions. You can do it. Make plans. Make changes. You can do it. You'll be the one. What's the mantra in Bhagavad Gita for those who want to totally embrace the positive illusion? Ishvara aham bhogi sarvaham bhavan sukhi. Ishvara aham, I am the controller. Aham bhogi, I'm the enjoyer. Sidoham, I am perfect. Balavan, powerful. Sukhi, I am happy. This is positive illusion at its best. So, we can give depressed persons some credit. They see that they're powerless. They see that the world is a rotten place, but they don't know what to do about it. That's the problem. So this is your choice in material life. Either you have so-called positive illusions or you become depressed. Those are your options. And now, according to the World Health Organization, mental depression is fast becoming the number two disease in the world. Behind heart disease. And most of that depression is going on in the developed countries. They've chewed the chewed. Remember we discussed chewing the chewed? Prahlad Maharaj's example. In the developed countries, they've already chewed the chewed and they're depressed. And now they're looking at India. Okay, we're going to give you what's already been chewed. You chew it and become depressed also. And then we'll sell you the drugs to get over depression. We'll sell you the pharmaceuticals. So these are your options in the world of material success. Either depression or positive illusion. The intelligent person will reject both those possibilities. Let me learn from Krishna how to balance the spiritual and material energies, how to be spiritual within the material world. That's the greatest art, the greatest science, the greatest culture. Anything else? Very nice questions. Way in the back, in the farthest corner, a hand is raising. Two hands in the back.
Hare Krishna, thank you for enlivening class, Maharaj. My questions are basically two. So you said the motivation behind planning for materialistic people is their sense of control. They have a small sense of illusion that there something in their control. So that motivates materialistic people to plan and execute their material plans. But what's the spiritual motivator for devotees to plan? Basically, it demotivates devotees that if we are not the controller, why do we plan? Can you please clarify that thought, basically, regarding planning? And the second question...
Question at a time, please. Okay. So you are asking why should devotees make plans because they know that they're not the controllers. But We make plans knowing that Krishna is the controller. So we make plans how to please Krishna. We do our best. And then as Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, nimitta matram bhava sapisachan, oh Arjuna, you can just be an instrument in this battle. So we try to be Krishna's instruments. That effort to please Krishna is within our control. And then for the results, we depend on Krishna. So devotees are always making plans how to please the Supreme Controller. It's just that devotees don't think that they are the Supreme Controller. So what's wrong with pleasing the Supreme Controller? What's wrong with making plans to do that? We are not against plan making. We are against making plans as if we are the enjoyers and controllers. But in terms of serving Krishna, we have many, many plans. So many strategies, so many tactics, all for pleasing the Supreme Controller, but nothing for imitating the Supreme Controller. And what does material life mean? So many plans how to please you, and no plans how to please Krishna. That's the difference between material and spiritual life. Yes.
Second is like as the topic of self-confidence also came, like
topic of what?
Self-confidence that devotee asked you. And
yes.
So further elaboration, I want to, like for example, as devotees, when we are connected to Krishna, it's like as you said, wisdom culture will help you. It will be give you largest success in your life. But at the same time, I find, in my personal life and in many devotees' life also, because the professional or material things which they are trying to pursue, because they are not thorough with the subject matter or that thing, even though they are connected in spiritual life, they are not as confident as many materialistic, those who have no touch of any spiritual life, but because they are thorough in the matter that they are doing, they are much more confident than devotees many times. So...
Yes, I was thinking to address this detail also. There is a debate amongst material psychologists. How much false confidence is good and how much false confidence is bad? Because they accept that the natural human tendency is to be overconfident and over-optimistic, somehow or other. The material mind, the conditioned mind, is built like that, to believe in material happiness. Doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, you believe there's such a thing as material happiness. Whether you get it as a rich person or a poor person, you believe it's out there, material happiness. Whether I get it in a tiny way or get it in a, on a grand scale, still, the principle is the same. So, is this confidence good or is it bad? Some say that it's good because with this false confidence, you'll work very hard for success. But then it's pointed out that you're going to be disappointed. You're not going to get what you want in terms of the happiness. Even material psychologists, material social scientists are understanding that even if you get what you want, it's not going to satisfy you. So they've come up with a compromise that in the initial phases of planning, you should be very confident. So that means that eventually when your plan doesn't meet with all the success you want, you can make another plan. And in the beginning stages, again, you can be confident. So confidence is very good in the initial stages of plan making. But then once you start putting the plan in action, you have to scale back the confidence because there are going to be problems. And then when it's time to make a new plan, then again you are confident. This sounds like a crazy life, doesn't it? Why not see the outcomes? Krishna in Bhagavad Gita wants to teach you to see the outcomes of your plan making. That's why Krishna says, Asha Pasha Shataya Bhadda. You're bound by a network of false hopes. Mudha Janmini Janmini. Birth after birth, you'll be a fool. Bad enough to be a fool one time. Birth after birth? Mudha Janmini Janmini? We don't want that kind of confidence. We want confidence in Krishna. So the Krishna Bhakta, Krishna's devotee, has that confidence in Krishna. At the workplace, at the university, in the home. There is confidence, but it's in Krishna, not in positive illusion. So the more that you associate with devotees, the more you'll see that indeed they have confidence, but it's properly placed. We shouldn't mistakenly think that because they don't have material confidence, that therefore they're lacking confidence. They're like little children who know, I have a strong father. The child may be tiny, but the child knows, my father is big and strong. So in bhakti we learn how to function in this material world as Krishna's servants. That is the real ego. And we are very confident in that egotistical way, to be Krishna's servants. We engage in Krishna's service with great confidence, because that is our real ego. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I want to ask, like you told, whenever there is a whenever there is an imbalance between material and spiritual things, the Krishna will come and balance it. Right now there is a very high imbalance between material and spiritual world. Then how, like as you said,
so where's Krishna, huh?
No, he is there, but it is not balanced. It is imbalanced. It is totally imbalanced.
But you are among a congregation that has the balanced culture. Krishna is here. He's come as his name. He is present as his name. And you're surrounded by persons who have access to the world's most profound wisdom culture. Just like, I'll give you an example. In my youth, when I was 13, I was giving sermons in the Christian church. I was giving talks in the Christian church. So, in the Bible, it is said that Jesus is to have said that he's instructed, you should be in the world, but not of the world. But he didn't give any technology how to do that, no information how to do that. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains this high spiritual technology, how to be in the world, but not of the world. So you are surrounded by persons who are accessing that topmost spiritual technology. They actually have the information. how to be in the world but not of the world. So this is the great contribution that India can make to the world, fulfilling the promises of all the religions, teaching how to become the perfect lover of God while being in the material world, being in a material body, and then gradually you become spiritualized. And at the end of life, you go back to Krishna. And the knowledge of where you go is completely given. Nothing is vague. Everything is fully explained. How life with Krishna happens in the spiritual world. The method is completely explained. The goal is completely explained. We should take advantage. That is real success in life. That is the real wealth. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So we are very thankful to His Holiness Ramdev Swami for clearing all our illusions from this wonderful talk. Before we start the kirtan, we'd like to have some announcements. We'd like to welcome the VIPs who have come for our festival today. We would like to welcome V.K. Mehra, the ex-director of Reactor Project Group, BRC. We would like to welcome Mr. Neeta Dalal, IT officer in Anti-Corruption Bureau. So, we are very thankful that you have attended this festival of ours. And also, we would like to welcome all the new boys who have come for this Prerna Festival for the first time. Those who have come for the first time, if you can kindly stand up in your places. So we can welcome you. So we like to pray at the lotus feet of Shri Radha Gopinath that you please keep coming and inspiring us with your presence. And also we like to welcome you in our traditional style by loudly chanting Rebo! 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 Please be seated. There are a few announcements. Like to announce like this, there is an international kirtan festival next month coming up in just about 15 days, February 15, 16 and 17, where His Holiness Indradumna Maharaj, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, His Holiness Loknath Swami and many other expert kirtaniyas will be having a 16-hour kirtan for 3 days. And for IYS, the organizers have given a concession 40% discount only for today. So with including meals and all the ambience and all the nectar you will be getting, it is just 600 rupees for all 3 days. So please, there is a counter put below. So those who want to avail these passes can go down and avail these passes and contact Prem Kirtan Prabhu there. And the next Prerna, this is our 107th Prerna. So next is the 108th Prerna, a milestone in our history of Prerna. So that will be on March 16th by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. And our IYS camps for the senior boys, that will be on April 5th to 7th in Vada, in our Gordon Eco Village. And the theme will be Madhurya Kadambini, about process of Anartha Nivritti. The registration is only online, so you will be getting on our Facebook page, prerna.ivs. So these are the few announcements. So now we like to request His Holiness Devamre Swami to lead the final rousing kirtan. So all can stand and dance.